We usually start by doing some chanting. And the chanting is mostly to scare away the ghosts. Because if you listen to our chanting, no self-respecting ghost can stand it. And they run away as fast as they possibly can. Is that true?
Yeah.
What, have you ever seen a ghost in here?
No,
because it works. Okay, proves it. Oh, the joke for the day. I'm not sure I told you this before, but why do you never see elephants hiding in trees? No, wrong answer. Why do you never see elephants hiding in trees? Yeah, exactly. They're too good at hiding. They're hiding in trees. That's what they're doing. Just like the US Army. They spend a lot of time getting these stealth lorries. You know, the trucks with great camouflage, state of the art. Now they can't find where they park them. They're camouflaged. Okay, enough. Anyway, here we go.
This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature.
Let them not
do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child.
So with a boundless
heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. There we go. That scared away all the ghosts. Very good. Excellent. So, meditation. How to make the mind wonderful, peaceful, calm, happy, healthy. What was it, about a week ago, I had a sore throat. It was the pony virus. I was a little horse.
Oh, come on.
Oh,
it takes a while, but eventually get it. Yeah, you've got it as well now.
Anyway, so meditation, obviously, the way you meditation, you get like, feel light body, light heart. Not so serious. Because sometimes when people do meditation, it's just like yoga. Or maybe I should say yoga, like going to the gym. Really a lot of effort, but real meditation is nice and peaceful and very calm and really nice and still. So your body relaxes and your mind relaxes as well. So, don't look upon meditation like something you have to really work hard for. You have to strive. You have to push. Meditation is the opposite of that. It's learning how to relax to the max. Do you understand that saying? All together now? Relax to the max. No, that was too fast. Get into it. Okay. Relax to the max. Oh, yeah. So that's what meditation does, learning how to really, really relax. So how can we relax? Obviously, just have a little bit of fun and laughter. That actually does relax you. Because sometimes we take life so seriously, carrying the weight of all of our problems. Sometimes it's one of the reasons why we take our shoes off when we come into anything to do with meditation or Buddhism. You know why we do that? It's to stop you actually throwing your shoes at me if I say another one of that joke. But no, it's a nice little metaphor, because the shoes are how you travel through life. So where you come from, you wore your shoes to get here. Where you're going to, you wear your shoes to travel on your journey into the future. But right now, you take your shoes off, you can't really go anywhere unless you want to get cold feet or get your feet dirty. So this is a nice place where you can just remember, you're not going anywhere, you're being here. So don't try and achieve something in meditation, just instead trying to get somewhere. Learn the art of just being here, which means no past, no future. Come into this wonderful present moment. So how do we actually do that? For those of you who are... Okay, I might as well use this water here. For those of you who haven't seen this simile before, how heavy is this bottle of water? The more I drink, the lighter it gets. That's not what I mean. So the longer you hold it, the heavier it feels. After 1 minute, you get tired. 2 minutes, it starts to hurt. 3 minutes, you get in pain. What's the problem? You don't know how to put it down and let it go. That's the big difficulty in our life. We think we always have to keep holding on to things, going somewhere. So just letting it go, putting it down, resting for a few minutes. So, I don't know, or where you've come from, or the difficulties you've experienced, or the unfinished work which is waiting for you when you get home. That's the future and the past. Can't we just have a nice little time where we can put everything down and just be? Instead of having these big heavy burdens, the left shoe, your past, your right shoe, your future. We leave them outside. How many of you wear your shoes when you go to bed at night? Of course you don't. That's really a filthy habit. So, your left shoe, if you really want to, you can actually write on it, P-A-S-T, on the left shoe. On the right shoe, F-U-T-U-R-E. So when you go to bed, you can put those under the bed, so on the slippers, so you don't take your past and future into bed with you. Nor do you take your shoes into bed with you, yeah. So you leave them outside so you can rest. So if you want to sleep well at night, just when you take your shoes off or slippers off, just imagine you're taking off your past, you're taking off your future, so you can get into bed without any past, without any future, just free in this moment. If you learn how to do that, first of all, people are just so afraid. If I don't figure out all the mistakes of my past, if I don't keep thinking about them and finding solutions from the past, oh, it's going to get worse. It doesn't get worse. Just carrying around the past, you know, sometimes you have to deal with the past, but carrying along the past is just too heavy. And you never find any solutions by thinking of the past. All the solutions to life you find in the present moment. This is life in action. And as for the future, what Snoopy used to say, this is the dog Snoopy from Charlie Brown and Snoopy the Peanuts cartoon. He said, doesn't matter how much you worry about the future, still bad things happen anyway. Worrying about things doesn't stop bad things happening. Worrying about things stops you enjoying this wonderful time before the bad things happen. Yeah. So, and often, sometimes, you know, you think they're going to happen, and they don't. And you wasted all that time worrying. So instead of that, we come into this present moment. This is actually where life is, where the action is. And the more you can rest and relax in this present moment, the healthier you are, the wiser you are. Have you ever found that in the present moment, when you stop worrying about things, the answers to problems arise? He's trying to think of somebody's name, and then he can't think of them. And then you just, instead of trying to think about it, you just relax and let go in the moment, and then the answer comes to you. So this is actually where we know, just from ordinary things, the wisdom which comes from just being here right now in this moment. So we learn the importance of the present moment, of just being here. And after a while we can get really into just being here, instead of worrying about the future or worrying about the past. You know, I go travelling a lot in aircraft, and people always ask me, you know, do you get tired travelling? I say, no, I don't go anywhere. I just sit down. It's the plane does all the moving. I never travelled to come here from Serpentine today. I just sat in the car, and the car did the moving. I'm really trying very, very hard to lower my environmental footprint. That's why I walk less and go in cars more. So I make less footprint. I don't think that's going to go down very well. Yeah, learning how just to be here. And that means you don't get so stressed out in life worrying about. Have you ever noticed you worry about something, it just usually makes it worse, and you just let it be, and it tends to fix itself up? So that's one of the reasons. That was, who was this fellow? I always liked the rebels. This rebel was the comedian George Burns. And he's not a very good example of a very sensitive man, because he would actually he went to nightclubs even when he was up to his 90s, and he would drink, you know, bottles of whiskey. he would smoke cigars and eat greasy food and stay out all night. At 98, when his birthday was, and I remember reading the interview. And in the interview, they asked him, "Aren't you worried about your lifestyle and your health? Staying up late at night, going to nightclubs and eating greasy hamburgers and smoking and drinking?" You know what he answered? He said, "I'm not worried about my health. My wife was worried, and that's why she died 20 years ago." Do you ever notice that? Sometimes it's a worry which kills you. So anyway, we learn how to not worry. Be in the present moment. You can actually get much healthier, and much more peaceful, and much happier being here. So what I'm trying to do is market the present moment. To actually to say, you don't need to worry so much. Just be here, and then we see what happens afterwards. So little by little, we learn just how to relax without worrying. So the way we do that in meditation, we sit down nice and comfortably in a chair, on a stool, on a cushion somewhere, on a nice, well, you must get very early to get those chairs over there, the armchairs and the soft chair. Are they the first ones? You have to come up sort of 6:30 to get us.
At least.
But you get a nice little chair or cushion, and then when we meditate, we close our eyes and we become aware of our body first of all, to learn how to relax our body. And you know that to be able to relax our body is very important, because by relaxing your body you can get some incredible like health benefits, which, you know, I've seen so often and seen with myself and with others. Just, you know, just was a couple of weeks ago, just 10 days ago, had the Solaris Cancer Care came to the monastery. They come every year to Bodhinyana Monastery, and then I also I usually go to their place once a year, and been going there for 35 years because this actually works. As many people know how to meditate, how to relax. But what you usually do, you know, you go through your body just like what's called a sweeping meditation, usually starting with the bottom of your body, just the legs, and working your way up the body and relaxing as you go. That means you become mindful, you become aware of actually how your body is feeling today. And also you can feel if there's any tight places, you can learn how to just relax those tight places. And as you move up the body, if you've got a little bit of an itchy throat because I've still got the remnants of pony virus. As you go up a little bit, then you can actually relax things. And then after a while you find your body's so relaxed and peaceful, and you get a lot of healing comes from that. And when you learn how to relax the body to such a degree, it's amazing just the health benefits which come up. There was just, when was it when I was last taught here? Because I was over in Bangkok just about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and at the retreat I was teaching over there, there was a couple of people from these retreats which I went to a long time ago, and it was amazing to just, you know, the sort of the healing things which happened there. Because there was one retreat I gave over in Sydney some years ago, and there was a fellow, when he was meditating, was making a lot of noise. And that was now a 9-day retreat. And now the first day that there was questions in the box, "Ajahn Brahm, can you please ask people to breathe quietly?" I say, it's a miracle he's breathing at all. Because he's got this huge tumour in his sinus. He was dying of sinus cancer. And doctors had given up on him. Of course, I wouldn't tell the story unless it had a happy ending. All those times it doesn't work, I don't tell those stories. But a lot of times it does. And this fellow, he said after the end of the retreat, he finally got it, learned how to relax. And he said he heard a popping sound. He could breathe through his nose. But only for 1 minute, then it closed up again. But that was really an encouragement for him. You know, it wasn't just imagination. It was that he could feel the air go through his nose, first time in months. And then what happened later on, that
No, it was the last meditation of the retreat. I came back here to Perth, and I thought, you know, he left it a bit too late. But then, about 6 months later, this guy came up to me and said, "Do you remember me?" "Never do that to me, please." I see something, and I live in the present moment. I let go. It's not bad memory. It's just you let go. Keep it simple. So, I don't know who the hell are you. He said, "I was that guy." He said the tumour totally went. And he said he was in full remission. Doctors couldn't believe what was going on. But he said, "I'm spending the rest of my life, however many months, years I've got, just teaching that meditation to others," which was really nice. Mm-hmm. Many stories like that. But how you do it is, you know, you can feel that tumour, you can feel that pain, you can feel that wound. That's an easy thing to do. And that's mindfulness, the awareness of it, and then you learn how to relax around it. Because what awareness does, it gives you the feedback. The feedback, you can actually see, just like you know whether it's getting hotter or colder in this room. You can tell in your car, you know, whether the speed is going faster than the speed limit or lower than the speed limit, you can actually see that. And so, mindfulness gives you to see how things are going, whether that part of the body is relaxing, easing off, or whether it's getting more tight and tense and painful. And little by little you learn how to relax anything in your body and just relax it so much and give it so much ease that you can feel like healing happening. So this is actually what happens in this meditation, but you've got to relax a lot first of all. And on that sometimes, as part of this healing business, sometimes you find parts of the body getting hot, the hot spots in meditation. And if it does, when you're very peaceful, you start feeling very hot, don't be afraid. It's wonderful, because it nearly always is the case that healing is happening there. One of the times, this person who was meditating, they said, they got quite peaceful in the meditation. This big heat in their shoulders and in their neck. It's really hot. Not all over the body, but just in that one part of their body. And I said to them straight away, when did you have your car accident? Your whiplash. I always suspected you Buddhist monks could read my mind. At last I have proof. You got psychic powers. Do you want to hear a story about reading minds? This is a true story. It happened. This was in Thailand many years ago. And there was, not the present kings, but a long time ago, is one of the kings had one of their ministers who was a big know-it-all. Just, you know, was always thought he was an expert on everything. You know what those know-it-alls are like? Just a pain in the neck. So all the other ministers were so fed up with this guy, they wanted to, you know, get his comeuppance. And so they hatched this plan to humiliate him in front of the king. So they knew he was proud and egotistical. So the next morning, when the king was there and he started speaking, they all started praising this minister. "How wise, how helpful, how hard working you are." And he said, "Oh yeah, I'm hard working. And how wise you are." "Yeah, I'm wise." "And how the king is so lucky to have you as one of his ministers and advisors." "Oh yeah, the king's very lucky to have me." "You're so wonderful and so skillful. You can probably even read people's minds." And not knowing what he was saying, the minister said, "Yeah, I can read people's minds." He said that in front of the king. "Okay, prove it. In front of the king, tell him what we're all thinking." And the plan was, whatever he said, they would always deny it. So how can you prove what a person's thinking? And this minister said, "Yeah, I know what you're all thinking. You're all thinking kind, loyal thoughts towards His Majesty." "Oh, that's right, yeah."
It's more important they implied like that, even though they weren't thinking that at all. Otherwise they get in big trouble. It's called the care principle. You know the care principle?
I got this from Ajahn Sujata the other day, the care principal. This local council officer came to see him in his monastery some time ago. He said, I follow the care principle. Cover arse, retain employment.
Have you known people like that in your job? Yeah. That's not the right caring, anyway.
Anyway, where was I going? I was back in reading minds. Oh, yeah, healing. I said, no, it's nothing about reading minds. All it is knowing that when you really relax and you get hot spots in your body, that is some healing going on. You can actually feel it. The energies are now being able to go to that part of the body to do what they're supposed to be doing. And I say the most common neck and shoulder injury, you know what the most common neck and shoulder injury is? Of course, it is whiplash, yeah. So I said, no, just being reasonable, logical. But you know, it was working. She felt so much better afterwards because that's where the energy went to. So this is actually how these things work. So I'll be guiding the meditation soon. You sort of sweeping the body, mindful and relaxing, and you find what actually relaxes the body is some kindness, just letting it be, not worrying about the past and future, but being in this moment, relaxing to the max. And then that, you feel it relaxing, the mindfulness, the awareness, you see that body, you can feel it, get it feeling much better. And then, once you get your body all nice and relaxed, one thing which is sometimes not taught in meditation, but I really emphasize it, once your body gets relaxed, it feels so delightful. It's a pleasure of relaxation. You know that when you wake up in the morning, in bed, you're nice and cozy, and you don't have to go to the toilet. People of our age. But remember that years ago. You wake up in the morning, oh, I don't want to get up. It's nice and cozy and nice and warm, really kind. That feeling of really nice relaxation. Or, you know, you've just been to a spa, if you can afford a spa. Can any of you afford a spa? I can't afford a spa. So instead, meditate instead. Poor people's way of relaxation, but much more efficient. So anyway, if you go to a spa, you only relax until you get the bill anyway, and then you get tense again. But when you just really relax, everything gets nice and it feels good. I know it's important to really delight in a relaxed body, because that's important later on in the meditation. Because when you're delighting in it, you stay relaxed much longer. You appreciate it, you value it. And then later on, once the body's relaxed, you go to your mind. And that's where I introduce the peaceometer. You know what the peaceometer is? Like a thermometer. Like a speedometer. But it's a peaceometer. How peaceful are you? How peaceful are you right now? Number 1 to 10. Don't tell me. It's your private business.
One is a coma. What's the other one?
It's psychopathic.
Two.
Right next to a coma. Okay. This is much safer than the other edge of the scale. But anyway, what that really does is just tell you just how peaceful you are. You're watching your peaceometer. That part of the human mind, which you can look at, you know, which tells you just if you're relaxed or if you're agitated. And the next thing, what makes you more relaxed? What makes you agitated? You learn from yourself by watching the lid of the piezometer what makes you more agitated. A lot of the time it's like wanting something, remembering something of the past, picking up that past and future. Please put it down. Past and future. Don't wear your shoes in bed or in meditation. Just let those things go. And then in the present moment you've got nothing much to worry about. It's here. No job, nothing to do, just being here. And then you find you relax. You find the little needle of the piezometer to get less and less and less and less. So, I'll go down, down, down. Which means you feel more peaceful. You know, as you get more and more peaceful, you find out how just letting things be. Opening the door of your heart to this moment makes you peaceful. And you soon get very calm. So your mind is, and your body is relaxed. You relax your body and you relax the mind.
And that's actually how it works. And if you go to sleep, don't worry. The person next to you will help you. No, people don't usually go to sleep. So, here, you can experience a nice peaceful state. And it's delightful to be relaxed. People say, oh, they meditate, they think too much. You find you stop thinking naturally. You don't decide, I'm going to shut up and stop thinking. Because you're relaxed and peaceful, you've got no business to do, which means you don't need to think. Now, all thinking is about just not being happy right here, being a bit disturbed or wanting to do something. After a while, the present moment is so delightful, you'd never want to disturb it by thinking. Just being here, enjoying yourself. And you'll notice afterwards, my goodness, 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes have passed and I had no thoughts at all. Just enjoying this moment. That's how it works with meditation. And that's how we're going to do some meditation. Because now's the time, 5:30. Any questions, leave them to afterwards. Any complaints, goes to Doug. Any compliments, comes here. Okay, so I'm going to go and sit down on a chair. Could you hear me okay in the back?
Yes.
Okay, so great. Don't need the microphone.
Do you need it?
Very good. Okay, I'm going. Yeah. No escape. Very good. I thought you were going to say anything I say will be used in evidence against me. So here we go. So I will lead the meditation and then I'll be quiet. All it really is getting you started, and when you're off, then it's for you to experiment, enjoy, and find out how your mind and the general principle relax to the max. So close your eyes and bring your attention to your body. How's it sitting right now? Are you comfortable? Just generally speaking. Now we become more specific. How are your legs right now? Now they're really comfortable. If you're sitting on a chair, you can try and just push your legs out or bring them in to find them the most comfortable. You can move your knees apart or move them closer. For those with short legs, sometimes you use a cushion or a stool underneath your feet, which means it almost makes the distance from the floor to the seat a bit less. If you have long legs, then you put the cushion underneath your bum, which means your legs are more comfortable. So you find the best position for your legs. If you find that a little bit difficult, you can just ask a question. Legs, how are you? This is a means of starting mindfulness. When you ask a question of your legs, you get an answer. You're aware of the level of comfort. And once you get that awareness of how comfortable your legs are, don't just accept that. See if you can improve the comfort level. Adjust this, adjust that. If you need to scratch, scratch. And once your legs feel comfortable, then
move up to your butt. People fidget because they don't spend enough time just being aware and caring for just an ordinary piece of the body. So you can fidget now, make sure there's no tight pieces of clothing, that your butt is comfortable on the chair, on the stool, on the cushion. It's okay to fidget because that awareness of your butt feeling gives you feedback, and soon you find the optimum position where you can really relax to the max without being disturbed. And then you move up to your back. I always like to stretch my back at this period of time. Give it a really good stretch. It's just like you see animals doing. It releases endorphins into the bloodstream. Really just a little bit of pleasure. Immune enhancer, pain suppressant. A little bit of a stretch feels good. And then I let go. Until I feel the back is comfortable. You don't need to follow the theories. Instead, experience for yourself the most comfortable position for your back right now. If you need to slump, slump. You want to lean back against the chair or lean forward, you find what's best for you. Today, now. And then, once the back is reasonably comfortable, then your hands, where have you got your hands positioned now? It does not really matter as long as they are comfortable. So I ask my hands, you need to be moved, adjusted. And I get to know my parts of the body so well that I know my hands where they feel most comfortable. And I move them until they're in the optimum position. And then I go up my arms to my shoulders, because the shoulders are oftentimes they're very tense. So I imagine them as bundles of strings being stretched. That's called tension. And I relax both sides of my shoulders. It's like letting go of stretching things, and the muscles get loose and relaxed. When my awareness is on those muscles in the shoulders, you can actually feel things happening. You can feel it loosening up. I also know how to tighten them if I want to, but I decide to relax them now. Then I move up to my neck. People have neck pain often because their head is not balanced properly on top of their neck. So you can move your head backwards and forwards to the side, to the other side, until you find the best position. And if you have a little bit of leftover pony virus, then your throat, you can feel the itch, the irritation on your throat. And you can also feel just how to relax it. Give it some kindness. Open the door of your heart to that feeling. Let it be. You feel what works to relax that feeling. And then you can move up to your face, because people have a lot of tension around the eyes and the mouth and forehead. How tight and tense are those muscles? What do you have to do to relax them? Soon the mindfulness gives you feedback, and you learn how to, by your own choice, relax the muscles around the eyes and the mouth. Once your head is relaxed, you can look at your whole body instead of just parts as a whole, one unit. How relaxed is it? Still, the rest of it is relaxed and it feels much more at ease than when I first started. And even now I can notice some pleasure, the delight of relaxation in my own body. And there might still be a part of your body which is irritating. If it is, please go to that and focus on it. You may have a stomach ache, you may have a wound inside, irritable bowel. Wherever you feel there's an irritation or something which is unbalanced, see if you can zoom in on that sensation. Just focus in on it. Be aware of it. Then find out what makes it more at ease and what makes it more of an irritation. Mindfulness, which gives you feedback, allows you to learn. So find out how to relax even irritations deep inside your own body. How to see an imbalance somewhere in your body, maybe in a breast, incipient cancer. And instead of having fear and making it worse, how to relax it to the max. If you keep awareness of it, and there's something there, soon you'll start feeling it gets warm. A healing is beginning to happen. You've had injuries to your neck or to your shoulders. After a while, you relax, relax, relax. It starts to feel good. Maybe even warmth comes there too. We're looking at the most irritating part of your body. Just one thing at a time, small part. And being aware in this moment, learning how to relax. And see if you're afraid, the thing tightens up. If you try and control it, get rid of it, it tightens. When you let it be, you let go, you're kind. You find any tightness or tension begins to loosen up. Keep focusing on your body, this is important. And notice just how, when the body starts to relax, it does feel very present. Just being here, looking after your own body. If a twinge or a pain comes, then see what's necessary to make it more easy, relaxed, at peace, free. The tension in the body
is like a string, a guitar string, pulled on both ends. And anything hits it, it makes this big sound. If you loosen both ends of that string, it relaxes and nothing impinges on it. Something hits it, does it make a sound? It's relaxed, at ease, peaceful, pleasant. Move to my mind, to my peaceometer. How peaceful are you now? Number 1 to 10. Just a means to become aware of your peaceometer. What's it like to be peaceful? How pleasant is it? What causes that needle of the peaceometer to move closer and closer to deep peace? What disturbs you? Worrying about the future or the past really moves that peaceometer needle way up to 9 or 10. Right now, in this moment, you can relax and find some peace. You deserve it. Just be. Opening the door of your heart to this moment, letting it be, not choosing, not driving the car, but being a passenger. It's like going in an aircraft. You don't move, the aircraft doesn't move. You right now, you sit in this moment, time doesn't move. You're always here, just being here. Not trying to change anything, but just being here. How does it feel? You can still relax some more. You haven't reached relaxing to the max yet. Some people this time find it useful to start being a little aware of your breathing, the only thing moving. If you are watching your breath, as you breathe in, imagine breathing in health, peace, happiness. Imagine this riding on the back of the in-breath.
being in your energy, health, peace. And as you breathe out, imagine any sickness, tightness, tension, difficulty. Imagine that leaving, like riding on the back of your out breath. Breathing in peace. Feel the peace. Imagine it coming into your body and mind. And breathing out, let go. Let go of everything. Breathe in peace. Breathe out, let go. So like a bird, carrying on you the weight of its wings, no past, no future, just soaring in the sky. Peaceful, relaxed, at ease, at one with this moment, just breathing in peace, breathing out, let go. I will now be quiet for 5 or 10 minutes until the end of the meditation. How do you feel now? How relaxed is your body? And how peaceful is your mind? Can you notice the delightful feeling of peace? Being at ease? Where the tension is released as much as possible. I'm now going to ring the gong 3 times to end the meditation. When the last sound of the gong vanishes, it's a signal to open the eyes. Very good. All right. Any questions now about the meditation? How was that? Was that okay? Relaxing? One thing which people often ask is that when they go home, that if there's like a monk here or a teacher here, sometimes it's quite easy, relatively speaking, to meditate. But when you're by yourself, sometimes you sit down and think all sorts of stuff. But what you can do, which is very simple to do, is these meditations, which are recorded, you can get them onto an iPhone or something. If you don't know how to do that, get someone who's got some skill in that area, so you can listen to those whenever you want. So it's just like when you first learn how to drive a car. You need a driving instructor sitting next to you so you don't crash and wreck the car. In the same way that it's nice to have an instructor next to you when you first learn how to meditate. Which is why you can get these things. They're not free, they're priceless. Which means you can just listen to these anytime, wherever you want. And you don't have to be sitting on a chair. Sometimes if you're in a hospital, on a bed. Sometimes if you want to, the only peaceful place you can get is on the toilet. Yes, respectfully enough. So I don't care about that. So you can listen to my talks when you're on the toilet. There was this one lady, well, she was actually our president some years ago. And when I called her up about some business, and she said, Ajahn Baba, I can't talk to you now. I said, why? Because I'm naked, I've just come out of the shower. And I said, I can't see you on the phone. But nevertheless, she thought it was not appropriate to talk to a monk while she's naked. It's crazy, isn't it? And they think it's not nice to listen to something when you're on the toilet. No, that's fine. In fact, the toilets are very wonderful places to actually to listen to how to let go. Sorry? Okay, come on. That's why they call it, I like the way they call it in the United States, restrooms. Take a rest. Relax. So that's why it's very good to be able to meditate in places like that. So sometimes to take the meditation further, but after a while, you learn for yourself what works, what doesn't work. That's where the mindfulness gives you that feedback. You know what works, what doesn't work. Now, was there any questions in that box? No questions, so we can finish early tonight. Good night. No. You got a question? Anyone got a question? Come on, what do you want me to talk about?
King's clothes. Dependent origination.
King's clothes?
Moments from your book.
Moments from my books. What
books?
Book moment.
Clothes and dependent origination.
What?
We had dependent origination the other day when.
Okay, dependent origination means it's not your fault. Which is wonderful. So. Somebody says, I jump wrong, why do you tell bad jokes? And the reason was, it's not my fault, I was brought up that way. My father, he had a terrible sense of humour. I remember even before even knew I was going to become a monk, he used to say, what fun does a monk have? And the answer is, none. What fun does a monk have? Answer, none. It's not true. Have a lot of fun and in the right way. Okay. So slow. Anyway, I can try this one. He said that one of his friends, he had a motorbike accident and taken to hospital, and that had to have his leg amputated. And unfortunately, it does happen. They took off the wrong leg. Yeah. So as soon as they realised, they went back into surgery to cut the other one off because it was not viable. And as soon as he recovered, they took the hospital and the surgeon to court, sued them. And he lost his case. He didn't have a leg to stand on. That was my father telling terrible jokes like that. So it's in my genes. I can't do anything about that. So sometimes, sometimes we take too much responsibility instead of, I think we're far too responsible people. Instead of that, we're learning, oh yeah, I made a mistake. We all make mistakes. Isn't it wonderful if mistakes were allowed in life? It's one of the rules of monastery down at Serpentine. Mistakes are allowable. I made many mistakes. What are those mistakes I make? The chanting, which I do. Sometimes I do the wrong chanting. There's this marriage I was blessing, and I was tired, and so I did the funeral. They didn't know anything about it because it was in this Pali language which they didn't understand a word of, and I never told them, and they're still married happily together. It's amazing. There's a lot of thought that counts. Oh, I remember this one of the funerals I was doing, and it was a Sri Lankan man, a really long name, and so it was the son was the one who organised it all. So, you've been to a funeral, you get up there and you say, being the MC, and says, welcome everybody, sad occasion, the death of my friends, my followers, mother who passed away tragically. And then this old lady at the front stood up, saying, it's not me who's dead, it's my husband. 50-50 chance and I blew it. These are all true stories, happen. But sometimes the mistakes actually are really good for you. But this one actually just made, it was $100 I made out of this mistake. Because I was in Malaysia teaching a retreat, and this couple came in, to talk about the meditation interview time. And, she was, she did all the talking. And then afterwards, after 10 minutes, I just said, is that your husband next to you? And both of them burst out laughing and said, no, he's not my husband, he's my father. And I said, well, how old are you? She said, she's only 16 or 17, that's why she brought her father in for the interview. So, wow, you look like you're in your early 20s. If you say that to a 16-year-old, she thinks you're really cool. Thank you. But not as much as a father like me. I said, how old are you? He said, about 40. Oh, you look nothing like 40, maybe your late 20s. That's why I thought you were husband and wife. I said, wow, I like this monk. And they went outside. They came in 5 minutes later with a donation of $100. $100 Aussie. And they had a little card there to say, this is a donation to you, but please use some of it to get your glasses checked and get back to Perth. But mistakes are fun sometimes. So that's why we don't get tense. We don't put ourselves to make mistakes. Don't have to be perfect. So that gives you a little bit of irresponsibility. You don't have to be perfect in life. Which also means you can relax more. And when you don't try so hard to be perfect, you find you don't make so many mistakes. Strange thing, isn't it? Trying to be perfect, that's where we get so tense we keep falling over and make mistakes. We learn just to be who we are, and then it's so easy, life. You don't just look at your partner. You've got sometimes to say, oh my goodness me, why did I marry him? So what are you talking about? The question is, why did he marry you? You both deserve one another, don't you? That was what somebody said. You don't have to be perfect to fall in love and live with one another. Are you trying to find Mr. Right in life? I said that today to someone. He said, well, I found Mr. Right. That's why he always has to be right. What's your fault that you wanted Mr. Right? Wouldn't it be nice finding someone who's Mr. Wrong? You have a much easier life, because if I'm Mr. Wrong, then you could be right. We have in Buddhism, if you're living together with a couple, in order to have harmony, if you're living with somebody, he always has to be right, and he can't be wrong. You ever live with someone like that? Yeah, all the time usually. He always has to be right. So we try to make it fair, because that's the trouble. Yeah, I'm right sometimes I'm wrong. So when we try and make it fair, we use what we call the calendar method for happy relationships. You know the calendar method? So you're about to have an argument. Look, doesn't matter who you're married to. If they are the top lawyer in Perth, you will never be able to convince your partner they're wrong. You may be a professor of philosophy at the university, you'll never be able to convince your partner that they're wrong. You may have all the facts, all the evidence, but still it doesn't work. That's a waste of time having arguments. You'll never be able to convince the person you live with that they're wrong and you're right. Just a waste of time. So there's another way. We call it the calendar method. And the calendar method is, when you're having an argument, you may have to make a decision. Look at the day of the month. So what day is it today? It's the 10th, isn't it?
Yes.
10th. Okay, so it's an even day. On the even day, the men are right. On the odd days of the month, the girl is right. So that's fair. Says all the arguments. So it's very easy. And people actually practice that. Yeah. Trouble was, when we allowed same-sex marriage, what did you do? It doesn't work anymore. But anyway, because. It's true, isn't it? It's a great idea, but there's always something comes up and it doesn't work. But you know, what's more important? Is it being in harmony or being right? So that's sometimes what we do to save arguments. And it's okay being wrong sometimes. And when you're wrong, you can relax and laugh about it. And your house doesn't have to be perfect. Is your house perfect? Did you have to wash up all the dishes before you came here today?
No, lift them all.
Excellent. Good, I follow you. I always say, before you wash the dishes, always see how many clean ones are left. And if the clean ones are more than the dirty ones, then quit while you're ahead. Makes sense to me. Never do today what you can put off until tomorrow, because you might die tonight. Imagine that, just because it's a beautiful house, all nice and clean and wonderful,
and your dad said, you never had a chance to enjoy it. It's going to happen one day, you know. There's another Snoopy wisdom. You know, Snoopy the dog. His friend Charlie Brown said to him, you know, one day we will all die. One day we must die. And Snoopy said, yeah, but most days we don't die. That's called positive thinking. So, yeah, it's true, isn't it? Most days you don't die. So, yeah, don't do today until you do wake and put off until tomorrow, because you might die tonight. Chances are you won't, but at least you'll be able to enjoy tonight. Yeah, exactly. So little by little we learn how to have a positive attitude in life and learn to allow mistakes to happen, because that's our life. And sometimes we get so tense that when we try to make things perfect, and perfection doesn't exist in this world. So that means that we can learn how to have a bit more peace in life. And even when you're at work, and there's sometimes that people work too hard. You work too hard at work? No.
Not today.
Not today. Well, I can get your job, please, because I'm trying to retire. I'm over, I'm 67 this year. Should have retired. And I know that sometimes, I don't know about you, but when I was in Thailand recently, you know, they asked how old I was. They wouldn't believe that I was 67. They said, how come you so young, look so young? And I said, because I've never been married. You're laughing. There must be some truth in it. Yeah. So anyway, any questions, comments about, again, that's just about dependent origination. It's like all cause and effect. So put the right.
I thought your birthday, I thought it was 1951, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, you're 58 this year. 68. Same, isn't it?
68, yeah. That's what I said. Retiring age. Yeah, they won't let me retire. Because being a monk, you don't have any money. So I got no superannuation. I got no credit card. I got no... What else haven't I got? I haven't got any bank accounts. So I can't retire. Oh, yeah, thank you. At last I got some sympathy. Oh, you're very, very kind. So, anyway, yes, you've got a question, comment, complaint. Great.
I've got this friend.
Yeah?
That's just me.
Yeah, okay. Right, wonderful. I'm a friend to me as well. Yeah.
Everything that's going on in the world.
Yeah.
Climate change, how we bring up our kids. I tend to worry about them a lot. Not that I do anything about it, but I do get concerned about it. And
yeah.
Well, should I, or should I just join the ranks of the apathetic?
No, if worrying too much usually makes it worse. So pick what you can make a difference on. You can't do everything in this world. And that's what happens. People try too hard. They aim so high that after a while they get disillusioned. They just give up. So there's always something, a little thing you can do. And you do that first of all. So there's many problems in this world that, you know, you won't be able to fix up. It seems you won't be able to fix up. There's some things you are able to do. So focus on those. But worry is not a solution. So instead, I don't know, like many young people, when you're young, you want to save the world. But then I found out that just, you can't do that. But just save one person. One at a time. That was my goal. If I could find just one person and afterwards they tell me, thank you, without you, you know, I'd been in a big mess. You know, I'd have been even dead, suicided. So thank you. Like, there was this one fellow, he used to be our caretaker over in our centre in Nollamara. And he moved out to the countryside in the wheat belt. And, you know, do some meditation. But, you know, being by himself, he got into a spiral depression. And he got as far as, he's had a caravan and a shed. He actually tied the rope to the shed
to the rafters, had a chair there, had the noose already, and he was in his caravan, sort of writing his suicide note. His mistake was he had the radio on. And on the radio, and today we have an interview with the Buddhist monk Ajahn Brahm. And I came on the radio, and, oh God, I can't get away with suicide, this monk. And so he untied the noose and he came and told me, he said, thank you very much. If you had been on the radio that day, I'd have been top myself. And so sometimes there's one person I helped. There's quite a few actually, but it's nice that you can actually just don't aim so high. And then there's something you can do. Little small things. And sometimes you don't realise just how many people, you know, that they do value you. That's why there was this one fellow, and I really admire his wisdom and just, you know, doing things a bit differently. You know, it was a literal example of thinking outside the box. He held his funeral before he died. That's called thinking outside the box. And, you know, he's going to die soon. It's some terminal disease. But he wanted to actually to find out, you know, just what people thought of him. So he had his funeral, you know, had the box there empty, and just everyone came and said all these wonderful things about him, the eulogies. I said, such a shame they don't say such nice things about you when you're still alive. And, you know, you've been to people's funerals and they say all so wonderful, nice things about one another, but when you're alive you never say that. So wouldn't it be a wonderful thing to have your funeral before you're dead? So you can actually listen, see what's being said. And it also means if someone refuses to come or says something nasty, you still have the time to see your lawyer and change the will. So, there's a lot to be said about that. But, you know, that's where he found out just how many people really appreciated him. But unfortunately never had the chance to say, or just were too busy or thought it was the wrong time to say how much they cared and loved you. And that just makes a lot of difference in this world. So there are things which we can do. And of course sometimes we get so negative, but I don't know that, you know, those of my type of age, remember just I was brought up in the ruins of the Second World War. And I still remember just in London the bomb sites used to go through, you know, just still hadn't recovered yet, still had not rebuilt all the damaged structures. And there's still a lot of trauma around. But, you know, the Europe rebuilt itself. And it was, imagine, that was a war. Huge war. Thousands, millions of people died. But people got through it. And they learned something from it. So little by little, it's amazing just keeping a positive attitude. You just learn that help a little bit. And from that, you find your meaning in life. It's not hopeless. There are challenges, for sure. And every generation faces its challenges. But we rise to those challenges. Getting negative just doesn't help anybody. But also, don't think you can achieve so much. Just be humble in your achievements. If everybody can just help one person, how many people in this world could be helped? I get into interesting situations. There was this one, I go to see these business conferences, and it's really huge business people. And I was, remember once I went to this one conference, and I went into the men's room, and in the next urinal to me was Lachlan Murdoch. I was kicking myself, I never had any donations envelopes with me at the time. Anyway, there we go. But I remember this one big businessman. He was the CEO of Changi Airport. There's a conference in Singapore. And he asked people, he always complained about you going to work. Because it's a rotten environment, how many people go to work and decide to make somebody happy today? So I said, if you do that, and actually I'll put my hand up, that's my job. So when you go to work, whatever work you are going to, how about making a resolution? Today I'm going to just one person to make them happy. That's my resolution. As well as doing my ordinary work, there's always different other things you can do. And if you do that, imagine just how workplace culture can change. Just one person, because people go to work and, you know, they just do their work, no one really cares about you. If you make that part of your job, make one person happy today. It's amazing what you can achieve. That's not a hopeless case. This world, this life. I've got quite a positive attitude.
I have to thank your positive attitude. I've been listening to one of your podcasts with collecting the eggs.
Oh, that one.
Yeah. No, but so much so that I've been talking to my son about it, that he made up little signs to put on the fridge. Not saying collect the eggs, and everyone's like, well, what? You don't need to collect any eggs at all.
That's the old... I think one of the monks said that the other day. I asked him, what did you say, Armadale? He said the egg story. You don't know that one?
No.
Okay. Two chicken farmers. One chicken farmer got up early in the morning, went into the chicken shed to collect the eggs. He went in there with a basket, filled a basket full with the chicken eggs, went into the kitchen, made an omelette for his family's breakfast, and sold the rest of the eggs in the market for cash. That's a smart chicken farmer. Chicken farmer number two went into the chicken shed with the basket and filled the basket full of chicken shit. You know, the little pellets of shit. And brought that back in the house. He left the eggs in the shed to rot. That's a very stupid chicken farmer. He wasn't very popular with his family. Stacked the whole house out. What's the meaning of that story? The meaning of that story is, when you come back home from work on a Friday night, what do you bring home with you? Do you bring all the happy moments of the day? All the wonderful stories of your life? Are you a shit collector or an egg collector? And most of the people, they remember all the rotten things which happened in the marriage, at work, at life, during the year. And it's okay to have the shit, but that should stay in the shed to rot and become valuable fertilizer. You don't bring it home with you. You bring the eggs back. All the happy moments you share, the wonderful things you've had at home during the day, all the wonderful stories you hear at Armadale on a Tuesday night, that's what you take back with you. Not the rotten jokes.
I was collecting everyone else's.
Oh, them as well, yeah, you got enough yourself.
Yeah,
I've got
a basket,
really,
yeah.
So be an egg collector. Yeah. Not a shit collector. Wonderful things happen in the world. I was just looking about all those kids in the cave.
Yeah.
And amazing things would happen. It's wonderful stuff.
Yeah,
yeah, I also saw that there was, because, you know, because I was English, everybody was talking to me about the football.
Yeah.
And there was just the manager there. I think somebody missed a penalty or something. And the opposition. And he actually put his hands around him and just, you know, because he did that years ago. He said he knows what it's like, you know, at such a high level that you miss. And he consoled him as the opposite team. That's really nice. So those are the things which make life very, very beautiful and wonderful in this world. There's little acts of kindness, and you can do that. You can be one of those people. So those are the things you should collect.
I had a nice experience. A very old friend that I've known for 6 years who's had a really awful cancer He never thought he'd reached 2,000, I was told. Anyway, just got talking, and I was something about having a grey day sometimes, and he said to me, I don't have grey days, Last year he looked like he'd come out of Belgium or something like that, and I thought, that was fantastic.
Because again, it's one of the best blood types, the best blood type to have. Be positive. Okay, there we go, half past eight. Okay, got any announcements to make?
Yes, I have.
Yeah.
Excuse me, I don't mind, I get that point.
Yeah, sure.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Arjan, for your time tonight on behalf of the group. And
there you go.
for your the next rain retreat, and hope to see you back.
See my back. I'll see my back now.